Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Love of Books podcast featuring Indian small press authors with host author Emma Pulova. I would like to thank our major sponsor, Doug Chauvin. Today, I will be chatting with a prolific author, Michael Klassen, of historic Sault Ste. Marie, who will announce the details of his book giveaway of the Alexandria Code at the end of the interview. Michael B. Klassen has been writing and photographing Northern Michigan in newspapers and magazines for 40 years, creating feature articles about the life and culture of Michigan's North Country. A journalist, historian, photographer, and author with a fascination of the world around him, he enjoys researching and writing about lost stories from the past. Hello, Michael. How are you today?
Well, I'm good. I'm good.
Do you have snow in the UP? Do you have snow in the UP?
Unfortunately, it's getting that way. It was almost, we went from 50 degrees yesterday to zero today.
Really?
Yeah.
We had like 72 and now it's 23. Yeah?
Right. Yeah. That's about it. A 50 degree swing.
Yep. Okay. Out of all of these things you do, guess which one fascinates me the most? You do so many different things, but I'm fascinated and I can give you a clue.
Yeah, probably the historian part.
Can you
What
see
is
it?
that? Oh, yeah. Faces, places.
Yes.
Got it.
Got it. Okay. Let's start off with what sparked the idea for your first novel, The Alexandria Code. We kind of briefly touched on this at the Wild Blueberry Festival in Paradise last August. The book started out with a prompt. What was the prompt, and how did you take it from one word to a full-length 256-page novel? That's pretty amazing.
Well, it started out as working with one of those NaNoWriMo where you're supposed to write a novel in 30 days, 50,000 words. Yeah. Well, that's, I did one, some, a contest that was similar to that.
Okay.
And the difference of it was, is you had, were given a word and the novel had to have something to do with that word. And so consequently, in this particular case, the word was crystal. And it kind of took off on all the different things in my mind of what a quartz crystal can be. We use them in everything. They're in watches, they're in computer motherboards, their uses are just countless. And now we've gotten to the point where we can even grow them. They can be grown artificially in a lab and that sort of thing. So I was kind of fascinated about that idea of not only growing them, but being able to use them for so many other different things, particularly in electronics. And so consequently, it occurred to me that a crystal at some point could actually work in a sense like a thumb drive where it stores information. There's even talk these days that eventually we'll be able to store forms of DNA on crystal, which to me is really hard to wrap my brain around.
Right.
But at the same, you know, at the same time, the advances that we do with these things get further and further technologically than, you know, as far as our imagination can take it. So that's kind of one of the things I did. But I also had started a book that was a character, kind of an Indiana Jones, Laura Croft kind of character. And I had written a prequel for her and or an origin for her, and that kind of thing, a beginning story. And I used, because I knew who she was and what she was, I used her as my main character and just kind of it took off from there and almost wrote itself. It was very, 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 very quick and a whole lot of fun. And one of the things I like to do with when I write my fiction is kind of take the reader on a bit of a roller coaster ride. I'm a big fan of action stories, old pulp fiction novels, all that type of thing. And those are, you know, there's a lot of action and adventure in those. Again, you look at like an Indiana Jones movie or something like that, where they start out with this whole one thing happens and then another thing happens and it leads to another thing and leading to another thing and leading to another thing. And I kind of incorporated that within the book as the essential backbone of how it was going to read and how it was going to run. I actually ended up writing it in about 24 days, the original version of it, when I did the NaNoWriMo thing. But it when I went back, of course, and decided I was going to publish it into the novel that it is, I of course went back, reworked it, rewrote it, added an awful lot more background than I had before, and then I took that original story and used it as a background for her about halfway through the book. So there's kind of a story within a story in this, in the novel. So
okay,
can
you give us a brief summary? A little bit of the plot, like the main storyline.
Well, it starts out with the main character is Isabella Carter. She's an archaeologist, professor, teacher from University of Michigan, who has been loaned out to New York University for this to do some teaching, and she meets up with one of her old adversaries who gives her a quartz crystal and implies that there's something more to the quartz crystal than just a crystal.
Right.
And so as she decides to take this back to the to New York NYU to kind of look into it, she has a group of grad students there that she has do research on this crystal. And during the research, they discover that there is some type of language embedding that they don't understand inside this crystal. Crystals tend to grow in layers. And so on each one of these growth layers, they were finding different information. So you've got literally different levels of information within it that would almost look like, you think of a skyscraper, and that each floor has a different layer of messaging as you go up the crystal.
So consequently
there's some information in there, which of course they have no idea what it was or even remotely how to read it or what it does. So the story basically takes off on her quest to discover what is in these crystals. But they find out that the crystals also have come from an archaeological dig in Alexandria, Egypt. And there's a lot of, currently a lot of archaeology and stuff that's going on in Alexandria Bay there, because that's where the Library of Alexandria and of course Cleopatra's palace once existed, and an earthquake put them in the bottom of the bay. And so there's a whole bunch of different stuff going on there through the Egyptian government that is being used to work in there. But anyway, I used that as a background to where they have discovered several of these crystals, even though they themselves do not know what they are. They have a particular look to they have a particular look to them. And so she's going to see if she can find other crystals, ends up in Alexandria and picks up this diver that also had some. And he turns out to be sort of a reluctant adventurer in the whole thing. He's kind of a hard drinking, hard brawling character that essentially lends himself out to different jobs around the world, and just essentially travels. He's kind of a vagabond type character, but most of the stuff that he does is related to scuba diving and whatever he
Okay.
can get, work through that. But on one weekend while he was diving in the Caribbean at a place called Bimini, there's a thing there called the Bimini Road, which people have believed for years might be a remnant of Atlantis or whatever, something like that, a lost civilization. Well, he finds a couple of small box that is laying on the bottom of the ocean between the rocks that, when he brings it up, contains some of the about three of these crystals inside of a little box that's kind of velvet lined and that sort of thing, giving the impression that they're a bit more than just normal crystals. So he brings it up from the bottom and has just kind of kept them as a keepsake. So when he meets up with Isabella in Alexandria, they try to get back to his apartment to see if they can find, see if she wants to take a look at the ones that he has. And the apartment's been ransacked and they've been stolen. And it kind of takes off on a quest from there to find out what happened to them, try to find the culprits that stole the crystals, as well as in the background, she's got her grad students still trying to solve this mystery, which of course will culminate in the end. Eventually, we end up having an airboat chase in Florida. We end up having a murder and different things in South America, which is part of her background. There are just all sorts of tons of exciting stuff that goes on in the book. Like I say, I tried to make it almost like a roller coaster ride.
Awesome. Would you consider the genre action adventure?
I would. It's a little bit, maybe just a touch of science fiction, about as much as you would get from like Indiana Jones or
Okay.
Lara Croft or something like that. But it's really a lot of most of it's based on what we do today.
Okay.
It's got a lot of it takes place in the current time. It's not like a 1940s thing like Indiana Jones is or that sort of thing. It takes place now. They're using cell phones and computer technology and all these kinds of things to try and figure this out. So it's something that's not that's as current and up to date as I could make it, from a technological aspect and that sort of thing. But of course the story is absolutely a little bit of a fantasy science fiction,
Sure.
but it's mostly just, like I say, it's a good adventure and there's a lot of action to it, and your main character is a female as opposed to a male, and
Yeah,
so
that surprises me.
that was really a lot of fun to
Who did
do.
you model her after? Did you have any particular role model, or how did you come up with this character?
No, she just kind of talked to me. I know that sounds kind of strange, but writers do that from time to time. You have to get characters that kind of talk to you.
They
When I, you
do.
know, the yeah, you are. I'd say I'd be writing along and have her do something, and something in the back of my head would go, no, she isn't going to do that. She just, no.
No. All right.
So
So she
it was.
probably dictated the story, right? Wasn't it like a dictation through your mind channel?
A good piece of it. Certainly the dialogue is. That was just
Okay.
stuff that went on, just inside my head.
Sounds like
Conversations
fun.
and arguments. There's a lot of I feel like, sort of one-liner dialogue and
Sure.
that type of thing throughout it. She's got sort of an offbeat sense of humor that kind
Kind
of,
of like you, right?
yeah, a bit. There's certainly, being the writer, there's certainly going to be bits of me in there. That it's
Of
just not
course.
possible to do that. And it
Okay. How was the writing of this, your first novel, different from your other writings? And how did you handle the difference?
it's longer. I really write a lot of short stories. I love short stories. And you can get into them and get out of them so that you're not like in the middle of something or whatever.
Right.
And
Right.
I also felt it was something that was becoming almost a lost art. People don't write short stories like they used to.
No, they don't.
And I think the biggest challenge for me was this book, even though it's a novel, as you read it, there are a whole lot of different adventures throughout it. And
Okay.
so, and in a sense, I think I being able to take that with that character and create all these different stories at the same time, where in my mind, there are a lot of short stories inserted in there, along with the
Oh,
novelization of it. And so,
okay.
you know, it's continuous, or you know, that type of thing. But also too, there, like I say, there are just a lot of things that I threw in that were background, but they're also stories within themselves.
Right.
And so
So,
that
what was the
was it.
most gratifying part in writing this 100% fiction novel? What made you really happy? Made you feel good about it? Or about yourself,
Completing
maybe?
it.
That's always the best feeling of all.
That was really something for me because, like I say, it being someone who writes short stories a lot, getting through it and coming out of it and
Right.
having it, you know, go as well as it did, when I wrote it, because, like I say, I knocked it off really pretty quick, the original basic novel of it. And it I think having finished it and sitting there looking back on it and going over it and really seeing what it was, there's very little I changed in it from the original story. I ended up just adding more and adding more and that kind of
Adding
thing. I the
more.
yep
Okay.
all the time, you know. And you know, I'd look at this character and think, okay, what kind of adventure can we toss in here for him? Why is
Sure.
he here? And you know, that sort of thing. And so we
Okay.
ended up, that's why I said there's a whole lot of little stories
A
kind of
little
enmeshed in
story.
there
I
too.
like that. How about any surprises, discoveries, or epiphanies while writing this book? What surprised you?
Again, that I was able to do it as quickly, be able to have the characters kind of really just jump off the page, sit in a room with me and tell me what I was doing right and wrong. It was really kind of fun doing that.
That sounds magical. What do you feel you did right? No one else could have done it like you.
Oh, definitely this is you know, the pacing of this and whatnot. If you've read my short stories in Lake Superior Tales, one of my earlier books, they tend to really have kind of a quick pace. They don't seem to take very long to read at all. They
Right.
kind of roar right through them because they're you know, I try to keep this sort of like what I call roller coaster pacing up. And the book has that really well. It does, when you read it, it does not feel like it's as many pages as it is. You just kind of bore right through it and get into it. And we've had a couple of reviews on the book. The first one I got was 5 stars on Amazon, which I was really happy with. And then
That's
we just got
cool.
another book review, which basically the first line of it is that this book is what action blockbuster adventure movies are made of. And so I
Yes,
was
I
really
have
kind of.
that right here in front of me. The stuff of which
So.
blockbuster action adventure movies are made. The Alexandria Code by Michael B. Klassen is a fun and riveting read from start to finish. Awesome. Congratulations, Michael. How about
Thank you.
what's the major takeaway from your first novel? Are you going to write more like this?
Yeah, she set up, and I've actually got a couple, three plots laid out to follow this up, and take it even further. There's something that's in the prequel, which is halfway through the book. There's something that's in there that really kind of is left untouched, and I need to go back and do something with that particular item. I don't want to actually reveal what it is,
Okay,
but
sure.
I feel like there's a real loose thread there that I need to go back and pull on and whatnot. I also have a story that of her that's been, I've got it partially worked out of her going to Isle Royale, which is up here in Lake Superior into the national park. And there are some very, very old ancient type ruins up there, of what they call the copper culture. And I want her to go and find something there that deals with the Spanish having come all the way up here in an effort to hide some gold and a few other things. I'm going to have her be the one who actually chases this down and
So you
that
have
sort of
big
thing. I'm not sure if
plans.
that's
You have
yeah,
big
I've
plans
got all
for
sorts of
Miss
different
Ozawa.
things.
Good, good.
Yeah,
I
I've got
see.
all sorts of things with her going on. So.
Okay, how about the most interesting or bizarre thing that has ever happened to you during an in-person authors event? It always happens wherever we go. Does anything stand
Yeah.
out?
I think one of the weirdest ones at this point is the guy that showed up last year at the Blueberry Festival drunk, to set up his booth and all that stuff, parked right in front of us, you remember, with the RV and that sort of thing. It's like 11:30 before he leaves. I looked at the guy, and I'm like, we all get here early to set up, And he kind of, he goes, well, when were you here? I said, well, I was here about 7 o'clock this morning. He goes, I was drunk then. You were obviously still drunk now, but he kept
Obviously.
saying,
Okay. Okay.
that was probably the most bizarre one
That is
so far.
bizarre. How about one last question before we get into reading? And I really want to know this. What do you feel is easier, writing short stories or writing a full-length novel?
Probably the short stories. It's just something that I'm more used to. And I still do it. I've got several of them that I've got off to the side here. I'm looking at doing another Lake Superior Tales
Sure.
book. And so it I have that I'm kind of working on. The stuff that's the hardest for me is the nonfiction that I write.
Oh, yeah.
When I do stuff like True Tales and Faces Places, that sort of, I have to research that. And
Right.
I spend a lot of time researching these stories and digging these stories out that, whereas if I'm writing fiction, it's out of my head. I don't have to do any of that. It just
Right.
comes off the fingers
Absolutely.
and out of your head. You don't have to necessarily play for accuracy or, get
Right.
the right story and that sort of thing. So, the nonfiction, I think, is really much harder than anything that I write, just
I
simply
agree.
because.
As a journalist, I agree 100%. All right. Would you like to read to us? We will soon run out of time. So I want you to get your reading in and your giveaway.
All right. I'll start right here. I'm going to start right at the beginning of the book.
Yeah.
And
perfect.
So the dark alley dripped with foreboding. The bricks of the building were slick and shined with the wetness from the Lake Superior mist. Dark black puddles appeared as pits in the pavement meant to be avoided at all costs. There had been death here, that much was sure. These old waterfront alleyways had been places of dark deeds for 250 years. Isabella Carter had known death before. She recognized its mark. This was where she had been told to meet the seller. She knew now that it was a setup. She had been lured back here to the Sioux where she grew up in a large cabin on Whitefish Bay. But for what purpose? Why bring her back all the way to the Sioux? It made no sense. Isabella turned around and started to retrace her steps back to the street. Enough was enough. This alley wasn't for her. Now she was acutely aware of the feel of the gun that she carried inside her coat. The mist stuck to her shoulder-length black hair. It had a natural curl to it that now was going crazy with the mist. Her dark brown eyes scoured the old alley for the danger she was certain was out there. She had made many enemies over the years and lived her life wary and always unaware of her surroundings. Whoever had lured her here had been clever. They knew which buttons to push. The possibility of restoring a lost antique from the black market into the hands of academia had been too much to resist. Sault Ste. Marie was on the Canadian border, which made it an easy entry point for contraband. She knew this town, and it had been a hotbed for smugglers throughout most of its history. She thought of the bait that had brought her here, a jade statue of the Mayan goddess Ixchel. It would have enhanced University of Michigan's archaeological studies tremendously, not to mention their museum. But now she knew she'd been duped. She had shut off her phone, but had left the GPS on. That way, she hoped someone would be able to locate her body after this was all over. Two men stepped out in front of her. Isabella's hand instinctively reached inside of her coat. Her legs tensed as she prepared to evade an attacker. One of the men spoke. His words seemed muffled by the thickness of the air. Dr. Carter? She didn't answer, hoping that ignoring them would make them go away. It didn't work. The two moved to block her way. Years of experience told her that her next move would be to pull their guns. She beat them to it. Her practice hand held the .45 automatic steady, deadly. Where's the statue? She asks, suspecting, no, certain that there had never been one. No statue, Dr. Carter, just a ride. Surprise, she muttered, but no thanks. One of the men moved towards her, and the metallic click of her taking off the gun's safety stopped him short. She tried to get a feel of what they were thinking, their motivations, their mission. Isabella could only sense confusion. She wasn't meekly following their game plan, and it had them uncertain. Good, she thought. At least she had them off balance. The overpowering feel of death in the alley clouded her mind. It had been notorious during the Prohibition. Executions had been carried out here in the past by bootlegger gangsters, though it was rare these days, an occasional body would still be found, murdered. Probably by these two men, she thought. Why else would they have called her here? We need you to come for a ride with us. Lazarus Fane wants to see you. Well, if you thought that would put me at ease, you're dead wrong. The only thing I'm going to do with Fane is put a bullet between his eyes, she retorted. So that was it. This was Fane's doing. She should have known, should have guessed. The two enemies, over the years, had come to know each other too well. If she remembered correctly, Fane controlled a shoreline warehouse in the Sioux. No doubt a front for illegal imports. Lazarus Fane was the kind of person she fought to rid the world of, a black market antiquities dealer, no looter. They were the bane of her profession, the blight of discovery, her lifelong crusade. When Isabella had discovered the lost Mayan city of Ichenbalam, Fane had tried to take over her dig and discovery. He then had her close friend and head archaeologist on the project murdered. Fane had made it personal. The two of them had a long history. She had sought her retribution more than once, each time certain that she had rid the world of him. Fane simply wouldn't die, but she still had hope. Someday she'd finish the job. Mr. Fane wants to talk to you. Our job is to bring you. We can carry you as easily as not. Isabella smiled at them, cold and hard. Now, that kind of behavior will get you nowhere with this one. She can put you both down, and that would be embarrassing, came a voice from behind the men. Isabella stiffened at the sound of Lazarus Fane's voice. Years of their war came flashing through her memory. He was ruthless, cold-blooded, evil, and she had been forced to become all those things fighting him. She hated him for that. She could see his face now, pale and drawn. The poor lighting reflected off the scar that ran down the side of his face, the scar she'd given him. She smiled a little at the sight. The memory was sweet. Her free hand clenched as if she once again held the machete that she tried to take his head off with. Dr. Carter, I have not brought you here to kill you. I brought you here for privacy. This alley has a reputation for death, one that I encourage. So it is avoided by everyone. Not even bums and junkies dare venture here. The only ones that visit here don't leave. So you can consider yourself lucky. You get to do what others have failed at. Leave here alive. Funny thought that, letting you go alive. Besides, I have something for you that I'm sure will pique your interest. Your help will be invaluable, Fane continued. His pale blue eyes were but slits as they stared at her with intensity. My help? That's not likely to happen. Fane nudged one of his men and ordered, give it to her. One of the men slowly reached into his pocket. Isabella still had her gun poised. He drew something out. Isabella's finger tightened. He held something small in his hand. It wasn't a weapon. Isabella's finger relaxed. Take it, please. Fane still stood behind his men. This is something I believe could change history as we know it. What is it? She asked. That's what I want you to find out. Take it with you, back to NYU. Look it over carefully. Study it closely. Isabella was on loan to New York University from U of M for the past year. She was working with them, helping identify Central American artifacts and teaching a graduate class. Isabella held out her free hand and the man dropped something into it. She looked at it. Shining even in the gloom of the alley was a quartz crystal. Okay, it's a crystal. What's so special about it? That's what I want you to discover. Believe me, there's not something to discover. I just don't want to taint your findings by too much information. Why shouldn't I shoot you where you stand, rid myself of a lot of trouble? It was a long-awaited pleasure she was having a hard time not fulfilling. That river over there could carry your body into the lower Great Lakes. They would never find you. Because when you come to some conclusion about that crystal, you're going to want to know where the rest are. You know how to contact me. He turned and was gone, leaving behind his two shields. When Fane was safely away, they too then turned and left the alley. Isabella Carter looked at the crystal in her hand. Even in the low light, she could see its details. What was the big deal, she thought. It was the typical six-faceted clear quartz, about 3 inches long and about 3/4 inch thick. The only thing she saw unusual was that the crystal hadn't been broken at the base. It was smooth and flat as if it had been cut or ground flat by some jeweler, making it ready for a setting. This wasn't Fane's usual fare. Outwardly, this didn't relate to black market antiquities. Had he stolen this from some idol somewhere? Fane was insistent that there was something more to it, something deeper, and knowing him, something darker. Oh, I think we're probably out of time, aren't we?
Yep, we're done. Okay, perfect. That was excellent. I love that. All right, could you announce the details of your book giveaway of the Alexandria Code?
My email is ClassenMichael, ClassenMichael, @gmail.com. And the first person who sends me an email from this podcast will get a signed hardcover copy of the Alexandria Code.
Awesome. Can you give us your email one more time?
Yeah, it's ClassenMichael @gmail.com. Or I can be gotten a hold of at my website.
Okay. Which
you know, Michael, MikeLB Klassen, ClassenCLASSEN.com. All one word.
Okay, perfect. And now, parting shots from each one of us. You first, Michael, you're my guest. What do you want to leave our listeners with?
To keep up with me and to keep up with where I'm going to be at, I'm doing a lot of events for book signings this summer. I'm going to be all over the state of Michigan. Once again, people can come and see me and if you go to my website, which I just gave the address to, MikelBClassen.com, I have all my events and places I'm going to be listed on that website, as well as a whole lot of historical stuff and travel stuff about Michigan's Upper Peninsula.
Oh.
It's just full of things and a lot of fun to take a look at. So check it out.
Okay. And my parting shots are write indie, buy indie, and read indie. Read your local newspapers for inspiration. Keep your fingers on the keyboard and your butt in the chair. Thank you for listening. Goodbye.